So my only real experience with organized religion came in the form of Quaker Silent Meeting, which I observed with students and colleagues at a friend's school in downtown New York City, where I worked for many years as a French and English teacher. And it's difficult to overstate the power that silence had in my life at that time. Long periods of silent reflection in a meeting house filled with students generated a kind of energy I had never experienced before. And when children mustered the courage to break the silence and speak, it never failed to be a moment of deep truth. And hearing the adults sometimes use that right as a chance to pontificate, which I fear I may be doing here, was a lesson in how the process of growing up can sometimes lead us away from the truth of our own voices. So my many years of teaching at this school were a kind of second education for me. I saw what mindful and loving edification entailed. I saw how time for deep reflection caused a sense of peace. Many of you may already know this from your faith, but for me it was a revelation. And one aspect of silent meeting that I particularly love is the importance of expression. For if, as is often the case, you have something you're moved to say, but you miss the chance or feel too shy to stand, you're invited, urged even, to share your message privately with someone after meeting. It's a beautiful exercise of giving voice, which I practice still today, meaning that when I've been carrying a deeply felt sentiment, I make a point of sharing it, and sometimes that sharing takes the form of a poem, like this one, in which I'm reflecting on my experiences reading the newspaper and also of being a woman. It's called Daily Beast. I commit to reading accounts of the torture before the beheadings as a form of emotional engagement with world turmoil, a juncture at which to decide which side of the dream I am on, one side being to study the invention of women by men, by which I mean to understand women as men's vision of the female version of themselves. Mistakenly, I typed remail just now. Flickering on the screen, another side of the dream, to remake things, to put the head back on the body, to commit to reading, loving, accounting for, the body of each man as my own. So the public high school I attended in the Bronx was nothing like the private Quaker school where I taught. In fact, it was quite literally the opposite, an impersonal concrete block teeming with thousands of kids. It had a great reputation, but its vastness prevented a feeling of connection, at least for me. A few weeks ago, a man named Milton Kopelman passed away. He was the principal of my high school. And well into his 80s, he had enjoyed a long and respected career in education. Stunned, I shook my fist when I read the news over social media, not because it was shocking or untimely, but because I had kept his home address scrawled on a yellow post-it in my wallet for months, finally losing it somewhere in New Hampshire. See, I had been meaning to write Mr. Kopelman a letter, not because I knew him well. I had, in fact, only met him once when I was summoned to his office a couple of weeks before graduation, which was kind of a big deal since our school had close to 4,000 students and only a handful of us had ever seen Mr. Kopelman up close in all our years. From what I could tell across the vast auditorium, he looked kind of like my Uncle Marty. And when I entered his office, he was holding a piece of paper filled with grids and numbers. "Tina," he said, "I'm looking here and it says you haven't attended enough school days this year to graduate." "Whoa," I said. "I didn't know there were rules about that." "Do your parents know that you have been absent this much?" he asked. Well, I said, I live with my dad, who's really my stepdad, but he and my mom were never married, so technically he's not my legal guardian. But my mom's not around, and the college counselor wanted me to become an emancipated minor so I could apply for more aid. But I don't earn enough money at my job to do that, and my dad works nights, so he doesn't really know. And stop, said Mr. Kopelman. Why don't you like to come to school? I don't know, I said. I mean, I like English, and I love my friends. I see you've managed to keep a B average without being here most of the time. And it says here you're going to the University of Vermont. Is that true? Yes, I said, I got a full scholarship. Okay, Tina, he said, placing the paper on the stack. You can go back to class now. So when I was allowed to receive my diploma at the Felt Forum in Madison Square Garden with the other 974 students, I thought, in my adolescent foolishness, that I had gotten over on Mr. Kopelman, that I had gotten away with something, not that I had been given something. It was through my many years of teaching that I came to realize that Mr. Kopelman was not just reading my record, he was reading me, seeing me as a young person who was grappling, but who might come out on the other side if allowed to find her way. I procrastinated and missed my chance to write to Mr. Kopelman, so I'm breaking the silence of 30 years and telling you. I am sure that even if prompted, Mr. Kopelman would not have remembered me and my penchant for truancy, but I wanted him to know that I remembered him and the gift of his compassionate judgment at a time when my own judgment was pretty poor. I doubt that I am the only student whose case he took into his own hands. As we know, the world is filled with kids who need someone on their side. I just happened to be in the right place with the right guy. So where am I going with this? The writer Annie Lamott once wrote, I've decided that the most subversive and revolutionary thing I could do was to show up for my life and not be ashamed. I've decided that the most subversive and revolutionary thing I could do was to show up for my life and not be ashamed. I realize now that I was quite literally not showing up for my life at that time. And what Mr. Kopelman did was give me another chance to do so. And I did. And I'm still trying because it's a process that never stops. And it's important for me to honor my luck. Just like it's important for us also to resist what we oppose by showing up, to commit to reading more, poetry sure, but each other, and for us to practice compassionate judgment, born not from authority, but from opportunity, for us to find those opportunities where we can, to seek them out.